What does it even mean to live a legacy? Often we think of legacy in terms of what people might think of us when we're dead, but then we're dead. We're going to instead explore a living legacy. This is your host, Danielle Strickland. This is the Right Side Up podcast. And this is a partnership venture with World Vision, Strong Women, Strong World. This is going to be challenging and inspiring as we interview people from all over the world in all kinds of different sectors, living a life now that will matter later. A living legacy. Buckle up. This is sure to be challenging and inspiring. And I'm glad you're here.
Okay, friends, let's talk about money. And I know, you know, the word that comes to mind or the phrase that comes to mind is from Jerry Maguire's, show me the money, help me help you. But we're going to talk about money, not because we love money, but just because we think money is a tool of empowerment and needs to be that. And our guests today are incredible women. Charity Wallace, she's an effective, strategic, purpose-driven, and pioneering executive leader with a proven track record of success in driving innovative solutions and developing unprecedented and effectual partnerships and program. Listen, she's the founder and president of Wallace Global Impact, which you should go check out. It's going to be in the show notes. She served on the senior leadership team at the U.S. International Development Finance Corporation as the Senior Vice President of Office of Strategic Initiatives and Managing Director for Women's Issues. This is foreign policy. I mean, guys, previously Wallace served as Chief of Staff and Senior Advisor at the George W. Bush Institute, the founding Vice President of the Global Women's Initiatives, and she was Senior Advisor to Mrs. Laura Bush. This is getting a little bit embarrassing. You know what I mean? She's just like totally knows what she's doing. From 2009 to 2010, she was Chief of Staff to Laura Bush. Listen, she served the Bush administration from January 2001 to January 2009, Deputy Chief of Protocol of the United States and Director of Advance. 400-plus annual events. Her roles have enabled her to travel to over 75 countries, obtaining firsthand experience and knowledge. Anyway, I think it's enough, isn't it? I mean, you can go on also this website, Wallace Global Impact, will be here. And then I also want you to welcome Emily Nielsen-Jones. And Emily is the founder of Imago Dei Fund. She's a donor activist engaged in promoting human equality, justice, and peace around the world. She's particularly passionate and engaged in the nexus of faith, gender, and development, and working to mobilize our faith traditions to more fully and unambiguously embrace gender equality. She's helped the foundation adopt a gender lens in its grant-making. She's also the co-author and convener of a project called The Girl Child and Her Long Walk to Freedom. And it goes on. Both of these women are exceptional women, are really smart, have experience and grassroots knowledge, and are currently involved in the Strong Women, Strong World team. And they're going to share with you the Impact Fund, the Vision Fund that Strong Women, Strong World has, where there's a way to invest, to use money as a tool for good in the world. And we're going to hear all about that. You're going to love them both. This conversation is enriching. It's personal. You know, it's not just heady. It's not just, you know, this is, I think one of the great mistakes we make is to think that when we talk about money, it gets all like into the stats and things. This is led from the heart, but informed by the mind. And then these are committed people doing incredible things. And you're going to get inspired and challenged. So please welcome Emily and Charity. Well, welcome Emily and Charity to the Right Side Up podcast. We're glad you're here. And this is the episode, I feel like this is the episode that is like a really, really important key one, in that we're going to talk about money, and we're going to talk about the way we use our money and the impact our money has. And I feel like sometimes, you know, we've talked about legacy in all kinds of different ways, but like, this is where the rubber hits the road in many ways, and money is power. So I guess, first of all, can you please introduce yourselves a little bit more personally? Like, how did you get to the point where what you're doing with your life is helping people use their money for good and with intention and redemption? So maybe, Charity, you want to kick us off?
Oh, sure. So I'm Charity Wallace, and I'm so pleased here for the opportunity to talk about this really important subject. And I think for me, honestly, it started with the generosity of my parents. So, you know, they modeled to us, as from the time we were little, even when we didn't have very much, the joy of giving and the impact that it has. And so as I have worked throughout my career, I worked for George and Laura Bush in year. Got to travel with them to 75 countries and see on the ground the impact that investing in women, particularly, how it transforms communities, countries, families. And I saw, again, firsthand how when we do invest, it transforms those families and communities, but it takes the generosity of people to do that. And as you think about what Jesus did here, you know, it was women who funded his ministry. We wouldn't have had the ministry of Jesus had it not been for women utilizing their resources. And so I think that that's one of the major parts that I've learned throughout my career. You know, I've worked at the Development Finance Corporation, which is America's development bank. And what we did was invest in emerging markets. And right after that, World Vision asked me to come on and help them with Strong Women, Strong World. And we created an impact investment fund specifically for women. And the idea is for us to give generously through impact investing to then transform the lives of women who are in rural communities who will then utilize their money to uplift their own families. So you see throughout history the importance of it. And for me personally, I guess it just goes back to the generosity of my parents and the joy that I have found in giving. I'm not the, you know, I've worked in mostly public service, so it's not like I can give huge amounts of money, but the amount that I give, it can be sacrificial. And it also enables us to be participate in the redemption that God has in the world. And so we get to be participants in that.
That's beautiful. Yeah, I love that you brought up, and Emily, just I'll get to you one second, but I love that you brought up that women funded Jesus's ministry. Because a lot of people miss that little, you know, Joanna specifically, just sort of named, whose husband was like the head of Herod's house. So even this idea of taking money that is actually money that maybe is like soiled somehow, you know, it's part of an empire that is oppressive. And but Joanna somehow leveraging that and then funding redemption and, you know, ministry of the poor and empowerment. And it's a very subversive work in so many ways and such a brave, beautiful little, it's just a tiny little line in the scripture that a lot of people miss, but, you know, raise up the Joannas. It's awesome. Okay, Emily, how did you get here? Why does this matter to you?
Well, maybe I am a Joanna, but let me say that it is a real honor to be here. I am a big fan of World Visions, and I have to admit, I've been binge listening to all your podcasts. And Danielle, you are an amazing podcaster, and I love the way you're entering into the word legacy. I have to admit, the word legacy and money, I have a little bit of a cringe response. So let me just say that up front. where to begin? There's a lot of life material that got me into this calling I am on now. And it includes some existential crises. I'm not sure if you want me to go there at the Strong.
Oh, yes. That's very welcome on this podcast.
I mean, it might be a little different than the entry point that Charity started with. So why don't I just, and actually these existential crises led me to World Vision. So let me begin with one that was in my 30s when I was in the middle of my mothering years. And these were sort of the whirling dervish season where you're multitasking, moving a mile a minute, some identity crises. But for whatever reason, the embodied nature of my mothering, just the primal love I have for my babies who aren't babies anymore, they're in their 20s, it just opened up something deeper in me. And I guess to make a long story short, I fell into the canyon of my heart. And I just was like seeking life and God in a new way. And I was really reclaiming my own agency, my own spiritual agency from all the beliefs that were sort of socialized into me. And I had a spiritual awakening of deeper love and just a sense of my own inner knowing. And that is a thread in my money story, really listening into my own inner knowing. So the next existential crisis was right after that. I can't believe I'm talking about these right here, right at the top. No bio. So right after that spiritual season, I was kind of getting to the table more at our Goldman meetings. And I'm married to someone that has done very well in private equity. And to be honest, I wasn't an empowered economic woman. I wasn't at the table with their money. And to make a long story short, I started joining some of these meetings. And I really just have, it just was very hard to get my mind and heart around our own wealth accumulation. And to make a long story short, I really built a bridge in my own mind between my spiritual values and, you know, the economic rules of the road, and really just felt the angst that we should be doing more. So my husband and I started to have really challenging conversations. We both believe in stewardship. We both have that value and agree that we should live below our means. But I just didn't feel good about just the way things were. So we built a bridge across both of our minds and hearts. And given that Ross, you know, made the money, maybe he believed more in the economic rules of the road of capitalism than I did. And maybe it's also my Scandinavian values. I just didn't feel good about things. So we ended up going on a sabbatical in an RV with our three children when they were younger. And we were visiting the national parks and all that. But we were also asking ourselves, what should we do in this bend of our journey around money and wealth? And we ended up deciding to start a foundation called the Imago Dei Fund. I can tell you more about that later on. But the other existential crisis was soon after that. So maybe it was all one existential crisis. As we got started, we'd really just said, let's learn as we go. We didn't have a strategy. We were told by some, like, choose one thing and build your legacy around that. And it really just didn't make sense. So we just said, let's learn as we go. And we started out with anti-trafficking. We're looking at what are movements of God in the world that we can support. And it wasn't long before I just came, really, really saw how hard it was to grow up as a girl around the world. My daughter at the time was like 9, and it just was mind and heart crushing to see this intolerable status quo around the world. And then at the same time, right in my own pond in Boston, my own religious pond, I was seeing the needle go back in the evangelical world. And a lot of women around the world that I was meeting with would say, well, the needle was moving forward for women and girls and democracy and human rights. However, the needle has been going backwards. So that really has kicked my butt into gear. So it's just not okay that in the 21st century, the needle is still so backwards for women and girls, human rights, and around the world. It's going backwards. So those are some of the motivations and really that led me to World Vision and the Strong Women, Strong World work. So
wow, that's amazing.
That might have been a lot.
No, there's a bunch of things in there I think are really essential. I think one, you used a term when we were on a panel together in New York and you said it's the intolerable status quo for girls and the way there's a lack of access and that. And I love that. It's stuck with me. And then the other thing I love is, you know, I met with Dr. Daniel Luvenge recently, who's from Kenya, who created this empowerment worldview that World Vision started to use. And we saw some examples of that. But, you know, he says in the empowerment worldview, he says, you know, how do we think change happens? And, you know, in a Western mindset, we believe that change happens through our heads. Like we think we can think ourselves into change. But he said, actually, the truth is that change happens through our hearts. And our hearts then lead our head, and then our head and our heart lead our hands. And I thought, like, your two existential crises are exactly that walking out of what Mvengi, Dr. Mvengi says is how you get empowered. Something actually has to shift in your heart that then informs, so you don't not bring your head, but informs your head, and then your heart and your head together make these different actions. And I guess that's, you know, so you can just go to get investment advice. You can, like, what are proper ways to use the money? And you can sort of say, you know, struggle with these systems and stuff. But when our hearts lead us, we know something has to change. We know that this money is power, and our power is meant for something. It's meant to serve, and we're supposed to use it. So how do we use it? So I guess then bring me to how do people use their money well? What is that reckoning in people? And then I guess one of the things I want to really zone in on are, why is the intersection of investing and women a place where we've landed?
Who do you want to start?
And say the question again.
Yeah. So one, I guess, is, will it, okay, let me ask it this way. Do you think it will make a difference that in 2030, wealth, the transfer of wealth is in the hands of women? Do you think that will make a difference, and why? So
yeah, I'll go. I do. So my story is just a window into this amazing force of women who are doing their money decisions in their own way. And as a mother, I know I feel the burdens. When I was in Cambodia learning about anti-trafficking, I felt the issues as if they were my own, because that could be my own daughter. I know that that is a thread that I've heard on your podcast. So we are more holistic in the way we see the world. And we're not perfect, but I do think that women are doing what I've been in a lot of women's giving circles, Women Moving Millions, and women like to do giving collaboratively. We like to learn together. We like to experience what we're funding in. We like to be part of the change we're funding, and we don't follow the rules quite as much as men do.
And interestingly, I think, you know, when you think about the transfer of wealth, there's a couple challenges and amazing opportunity. One is, Emily even referred to this, like, she wasn't a part of a lot of the giving, actually, as part of the knowledge of where their money was going and how it was being used. That is the case with a lot of women. I mean, I'm not married, so I obviously have to know where all my money is going. But I know that even within families, that is the case. And a lot of women lack confidence, frankly, in thinking about, can I both understand, manage, and then intellectually give in a way that I feel will make a significant difference? Do I have the capacity to do that and the confidence to do that, really? And then the second piece of it, I think, is with the transfer, women are compassionate, as Emily said, and we all know this. I think women are driven, that's the heart piece. It's like driven by compassion and then curiosity. I think about giving in like, and as we define how we're going to give and invest, I think about it in C's. So we're a family. My family is a family of women who have C names. So I think of this in the C's. So it's starting with compassion, really thinking about, you know, what are the issues around the world that resonate directly with us? So that's what I love about the fact that God made us so different, because everyone has something different that we really feel compassionate about or have an urgency to be a part of. Thankfully, we don't all have the same one. Otherwise, we'd only be looking at one issue. You know, I think that that's the unique part. And being okay with the fact that I feel very passionately about global issues. My mom has a different passion. It has to do with women still, but it has a different slant or a different vision for how she wants to utilize her resources. And then being curious, like Emily said, really learning about what are these issues? How can we give back? What's the most effective way to give back? And then getting very clear, like I think about clarity too, as being something that's really important as we think about investing and philanthropic giving. Having clarity around what we're compassionate about, what has the biggest influence and what can move the needle? Because there's a lot of organizations that are doing good work. Some have greater impact than others. So really finding those and having clarity around like what directly and then clarity around what has the most impact and then that commitment in the end. Like I think those are the, for me, those are the C's that I think about when I think about investing and when I think about giving. And for is an exciting time because women will have so much more wealth. And I do think that women look at problems differently than men. I think God made us that way. Not that one is better than the other. I think we actually have to work together in order to solve these problems. But there's a different way to solve. Women come to solving problems differently than men. And I think when we can use our resources to do that, there'll be an exponential impact that will take place. And frankly, like when we're thinking about what Strong Women, Strong World and Vision Fund and World Vision created, it's the impetus because of one woman who is the head of Strong Women, Strong World Advisory Council. And, you know, she's an impact investor and said, why can't we be doing this? I've looked around what World Vision does. They do programming better than almost any other organization, or I think any other organization in the world, having seen it firsthand. But then it's then expanding it to be impact investing as alongside the philanthropic giving. So it's utilizing both sides of our like resources and money. So it's an, I think it's a really exciting time to be a woman because we do make really good decisions about how we're going to utilize our money and the opportunity to do so. So that's my thought.
This kind of reminds me of, I remember years ago, I read the story of the Grameen Bank beginning, Muhammad Yunus and the beggar to the poor, you know, his story. And how, you know, the early days of microfinance as a means by which people could get out of poverty. And I remember him, like, you know, just saying, like, I'm not going to give money to anyone but women.
Sure.
Like, because of a pragmatic, well, one, they were disproportionately the poorest of the poor. So he's like, this just makes sense if we want to impact the poorest of the poor. But also just like, they're the ones that actually bring the best return. They're the ones that handle the money the best. They're the ones that bring the changes to the villages. They're the ones that, and so part of me wonders, you know, it's interesting, like, so we know that's true on the ground and that's true of everyone who does microfinance. We know that there's something about the collective, collaborative, committed nature of women that actually makes the most impact. But then I'm thinking like on this end, you know, we said like, well, actually women have kind of been left out of the investing conversation for the most part. Like, lots of people aren't even involved, or like they think they've been told maybe it's above their pay grade. You know, they don't have the skills, or thanks, honey, for the suggestion, but it's really let the boys do the boys. You know, Wall Street is predominantly men, you know, that kind of thing. So I wonder if it's actually, you know, that connection between women on this and on the Western sort of side of things actually getting to, hey, this is something that matters. This is something I have the skills to do. This is a thing, and that having a similar impact as the, you know, the female focus on the global end of things. Yeah. Emily, you got some thoughts about that?
I'm sorry. My Wi-Fi or something went wrong. So I'll just enter in on this. I mean, the theme at the Strong Women, Strong World lunch really said it all. Empower her there, empower us here, I believe it was. And so I think you're delving into empowering women in the West around money. I do feel like when you get around the world and you see how resourceful women are on a little bit of money, how they have to work so hard to own money, you know, in circles like self-help groups, it makes you really realize, okay, we do not have any excuses. We should step up to the table and make sure we're leading with our values and our heart, because it isn't just a cerebral conversation. And there's a lot of rules of the road around money that really just plain and simple are part of the problem, part of the patriarchal oppression that we're working to change. So I get inspired by, seeing women leaders around the world that are working so hard, really putting a little bit of money. A lot of organizations that we support that are led by women are running on a shoestring budget, but they get a lot done. They create a lot of good and a lot of change. So that inspires me to keep doing my part. And I see many other women as well doing that, and many who I've met in Strong Women, Strong World.
Charity, how does this impact fund work, and why would people choose it as a strategy of investment?
So, you know, their impact investing is sort of, it's become much more popular in the last decade, potentially. But the idea is, well, the fund itself, it's a $100 million debt fund that goes to Vision Fund. And they've identified very specifically, and we were very intentional about how we created this fund. It is for women. And it is for lone mother households, so women whose husbands have either passed away or had to migrate, or for some reason they're no longer in the household. So it's a woman-led household. It's for small business loans. So those micro loans go a very long way in these communities. A couple dollars will actually change the trajectory and future of a family in a lot. And then it's for water sanitation and hygiene loans. So it's the ability to bring in running water or latrines or, you know, where girls can go to school. So they're not actually going out and trying to get clean water and spending 5 to 6 hours a day and 10 miles a day. You know, they're actually freed up to actually go to school and have a better future. So that's the fund that we've created. And the really neat part about it is Vision Fund's been doing this for, you know, 30 plus years. And so they know to get to the right client. Those clients have all actually gone through the World Vision program. So it's a de-risking in our, how we think about it is less risky for the investor because we know the clients, we have the pipeline, we've seen them go through the World Vision programs, Empowered Worldview being one of them, the heart, head, and pocket change that they talk about. And it really has transformed communities and their economic empowerment programs. But also for the women who are going to borrow the money, you know, they are prepared to borrow that money. It's not predatory in a way because they've already gone through these programs, so they're more equipped. So we've really thought about it from both sides. How do we help protect the investor, make it less risky for the investor? We know the women. How do we make sure that it's less risky for the borrowers? They've actually gone through these programs, so they know what it means to have to repay loans. They have a community that can help them, and they're growing businesses that then have this like very incredible ripple effect that takes place. And for us, I think the idea is it's a trusted organization. So World Vision and Vision Fund are trusted organizations. It's an opportunity to give beyond your philanthropic giving. You get a small return on investment. It's concessionary. So it's like 2-3%. It's not market rate. But for us, we think when you're thinking about impact, that doesn't always mean the money that you're getting back. It means the lives that you're changing. And that's what this fund enables us to do. And so there, for me, the ROI is actually the women that get to change their communities and their families and their futures more than how much I'm getting back. And so it's just an opportunity to provide women and men the chance to invest in significant impacts that we know will change the futures of those in which we're investing. So that's what's so great about the fund. And you know, it, like I said, it's a $100 million debt fund that Vision Fund is operating, and it's an opportunity for us to give.
So you've been listening to this and you're thinking, wow, I have $250,000 at least to invest in something that the impact would be way better than just huge returns, but it would still have some reasonable returns plus a global impact. And you're all laughing, but no, seriously, if you are listening, you know somebody like that, or your family's like that, or your husband's like that, or your wife's like that, or whatever, go to World Vision Strong Women, Strong World, and you can read about this intentional focus on women and girls in every aspect of their work and the way that they're leveraging this investment fund and impact investing so that people can make a difference in the world and actually make a difference in the way that they invest their money, not just on the return of their money, but what the return for their investment is. So go there, Strong Women, Strong World. It's World Vision's movement of women, men, and young people using their voices and resources to drive change and improve the lives of women and girls globally. We want you to go there. We want to drive you there. If you're not somebody who has $250,000 in investments that you can pull out and put into this investment fund, you may be somebody that just wants to donate, and that matters too. And that's a really important, just to be generous and to use what we have to empower others. That's part of how we live our legacy. And if that's you, you can go to that same link and make a donation. Anyway, back to the show, and let's learn from these beautiful people.
So this specifically is targeting, or highlighting giving opportunity for high level givers who have sort of an extra couple million that are in sort of investments, and their traditional idea of investing is the return, and by return, they mean the money. How much money can my money make me back? And this is really a fundamental sort of shift to say, actually, we're still all about return. It's just that our return is how much good and how much empowerment and how much, change for good can we make in the world with this investment. And then also you still will get your money back, and with maybe a little bit extra, but that's not really the point, because the impact we're measuring is the impact your money is doing for good. So you're really redefining impact.
Yeah.
Which is great, because how much is enough? How much is enough? And then also, this is a shift from just donate,
right?
Which is also, we really want people to donate, because everybody should be giving beautifully, freely from what we've been given. But this is really this is an investment strategy.
That's okay.
How much do you have to invest to get in on this?
It's a minimum of $250,000, and. Again, that's a lot of money for a lot of people. But for those who are in impact investing, for those who are investing in markets, you do get an excellent return on your investment. And the neat part to your point is, not only are you getting your money back plus a little bit, you're actually changing the lives of people around the world. And I think about how we may never know the names of those that we invest in, and they may never know, but we may, when we get on the other side of this life, to think about, we'll have enabled them the opportunity to live into their God-given potential that God intends for them. But because of where they were born and because of where they live, it's more challenging. And so what an opportunity for us to really have that exponential impact that we can make. By giving back what the Lord's already given to us, our resources really are to our own. It's all a blessing from the Lord. And so to be able to do that in a way that's strategic, that has significant impact, and that changes the futures of others, to me is just it's an exciting opportunity.
Yeah, I feel like for me, when I first heard about this and I was thinking, you are really investing. When you invest your money in whatever company you choose to invest in, you are investing impact. You are in impact investing. It's just that the impact you're making might not be good. You know what I mean? So you're investing in Coca-Cola, no offense to Coca-Cola, but we know the impact of Coca-Cola factories in the developing world is not good. But you're going to do that because it's going to benefit you, but at the expense of other people. So what a great opportunity to not just lose your money, but to keep it as an investment strategy and to change the nature of what impact means. It's beautiful, beautiful opportunity. So $250,000 minimum, we know lots of people don't have that, but some people do. And some people have this in family wealth, so it might not be your wealth. And Emily, this brings me back to sort of that existential crisis, because I guess what I want you to speak to is what is your advice to people to have this conversation? Because I would imagine a lot of people might have a similar feeling that you have as you awaken, your heart awakens to this. I don't know if we're using our money. I think whole generation is having that conversation. How would you suggest they bring it up? Maybe it's kids with their parents, and the parents are stuck in this, capitalistic framework of measuring impact only by how much money we're making on our family wealth. What are the best tools, since you managed to do this in your family? What are the best tools to actually just begin having this conversation as a family, or, you're a wife and and the conversations with your husband or whatever the case may be?
Well, there are a lot of tools out there. There's a lot of resources. I'm not someone who gives a lot of advice around investing, but I'll speak, you know, from my own journey. And I guess I would say, really begin with your own values. Most money decisions are not made in a vacuum. Usually there's a partner or a family system. And, you know, it's just an opportunity to say, what are our values and how do those values apply to everything that we own? For us, the value of stewardship was something that Ross and I really shared. How that applies, though, you can have these abstract beliefs. And we were giving money away, but it wasn't in relationship to the denominator, shall we say. So I think there's like a reality of like money is not in some separate little compartment. Money is life. And it's meant to be flowing out into the world. I don't believe it's meant to be like stockpiled. And so I think everyone, given that the economic structures are the way they are, everyone needs to enter into those and, you know, listen into their own values. And if you have a spirituality, really bring that to the table, I think. So start there. And allow yourself to revisit some of the rules of the road and make them your own. You see people like Mackenzie Scott, shall we say, as an example, like she's just doing it her own way. And I do think the younger generation, the next gen, many of them are already thinking like this. And, you know, some of them who inherit money are kicking their parents' butts a little bit. So I think I basically make it relational, make it fun, bring in your spiritual values, get a good advisor if you don't know where to start. We have an amazing advisor that has walked beside us, and we do our philanthropy now, you know, not just the two of us, but with an awesome team, and we learn as we go, and really going on trips like with World Vision, meeting all the amazing leaders on the ground that work within World Vision. So it's an amazing journey, and you will not be disappointed if you allow yourself to maybe be a little entrepreneurial with money decisions and make it your own. So.
Yeah, when I was thinking about this episode, and I was thinking about this concept of women having the wealth, and I was just thinking about the potential tragedy of women owning the wealth and then just doing business as usual. You know, just that there's both maybe the greatest opportunity for us to demonstrate the change, you know, doing things differently. And I think we have it in us, but the greatest threat, I think, you know, or the greatest like question is, will we? And how will we? You know, because it's not just going to happen by accident. If you just inherit money and you leave out all the systems the same, it'll just be the same as it's always been.
Right. So if you leave it to the experts, advisors will often just tell you kind of the conventional rules. There's a lot of fundamentalism around money. So a lot of my journey was kind of awakening to the fundamentalism that kind of put these rules and propositions around my mind and heart. And I think money has a similar fundamentalism. That, you know, you can make decisions in your own way and, you know, just learn from others. There's, like I said, a lot of great for women collaborative places to learn and grow, like the Strong Women, Strong World summits. And there's amazing. So early on in my philanthropic journey, I met these real gender lens investing pioneers. They were kind of like people who worked in finance. They were more experts around money. So I'm not a finance person. I don't enjoy looking at spreadsheets. They make my eyes glaze over. But these women, to be around them, they were reimagining what the economy could look like. And they're inviting others into that So whether money is your thing, finance, you can find your own entry point and do it in the way that feels right and true to your own values.
But to your point, Danielle, and I think about, you know, what Emily just said, when we look at the numbers. So one of the things that I did when I was leading our gender lens investment team at the Development Finance Corporation was talk to my male counterparts and also those in leadership in other countries. So whenever I'd go in to talk about women's issues, I would also want to talk to the finance minister. And they would say, well, why do you need to talk to the finance minister? And I'd say, because this has to do with, if your bottom line is just revenue or just GDP growth, or women have so much to do with whether or not that will increase or decrease. And so we need to talk about the data and the stats that are associated with the fact that if we actually had the opportunity, if women had the opportunity to fully engage in the economy and in all parts of society, GDP would increase in the trillions of dollars in the next several years. And the fact that we're leaving out half of the population, or we're diminishing half of the population by either not providing them loans. So there's a $320 billion shortfall in capital just for women. That's in the United States, sadly, that's true, but mostly around the world, emerging markets. And if they were able to tap into that capital, they have great ideas to start businesses, then GDP would grow. And again, it would create stability. And it has a national security effect. It has a human flourishing and thriving effect. So there are, if you want to talk about with regards to finances and economy, there's great reasons why we should invest in women. But when you think about how the transformation can happen on the ground in communities, the most critical piece is women. And it's not, again, it's not to supplant men. It's not to subvert men. What it is to ensure that we are all living each one of our God-given potentials and what he intended us to live in. And that is into our fullest. And so to me, I feel like there's a great argument to be made from a finance perspective. We need to get smart on, there's so much great research out there now. We can make the economic case, but the compassion case and the impact case are underlying all of those as well. So it is really a special time to be alive, but it's an important time for women to get educated on it. And to Emily's point, you know, we have a lot of these women love to collaborate, and women love to give to our sisters across the world and in our own neighborhoods and in our own communities and in our own countries. And there's a lot of opportunity now, but I think engaging with one another to understand, what is it that ignites my heart? What is it that lights me on fire? And then be able to give in a way that's informed and intentional and has true impact. And for each one of us, it could be different.
Okay, you guys are doing this beautiful work. You've had this, you know, led by your heart and compassion, but you're bringing your minds. You've got the research. You know, one of the great baffling realities is that this is like, you know, the World Bank says this, the UN says this, like all of the great development minds say this, like all of the economic research says, if you empower women, it's going to be good for the economy. And yet it's an uphill battle. What are your biggest challenges in the work that you're doing? And then I guess, what are your, why do you stay in it? What's giving you hope? Or else obviously you wouldn't be here still. So what's your greatest challenge of the work at the intersection of finance and women's empowerment? And then what's bringing you hope there?
I would say, on like a macro global level, the biggest challenge is not that women are not empowered. They don't know what to do with their money. There has been a resurgence of you know, whatever you want to call it, authoritarian, patriarchal, political leaders, and also religion. So my part of my calling, and I still feel like we're rolling a boulder up the mountain, is we can't just like chop off the branches of the patriarchal tree. Like everything we're working on, the word gendercide, I think, is a good, you know, there's so many different branches, like child marriage, FGM, girls not being in school, you know, domestic violence, on and on and on, basically men sexually preying on our girls. So all those awful things that came out in the Me Too movement, the norms that created those go really deep. It's not enough just to like say we want to empower women, the Me Too movement. So I think globally, like in the sector that World Vision is working in, Christian Relief and Development, the sector where our foundation is funding, the women's empowerment programs are very important. We need to keep funding those and doing those, but we need to do more to really go beneath the surface to the roots underneath the tree that live on within our religious traditions, within our cultural traditions. And that's one reason I'll just do a little plug for World Vision. So when I started going to Strong Women, Strong World, the woman, Cindy Brielle, who was one of the development directors, she started telling me about, this is before I went to Strong Women, Strong World, she started telling me about this work that they're doing, World Vision is doing, called Channels of Hope for Gender. And she said, we're changing gender norms with pastors and it's really doing great work and blah, blah, blah. And I almost didn't believe her because I had seen a lot of Christian organizations, Christians wanting to fight trafficking. But then if you like click, click, click and looked at their board, they didn't have any women on the board. So they wouldn't want that woman they rescued to be on their board. So, you know, that's just rescue. That's not equality. But anyway, that those winds are still in the world and many say are picking up. So I think what we need to do is really just work harder on, you know, just the deeper problem of attitudes and norms. And so, yes, we're back to World Vision. World Vision has a massive global footprint and it has really committed to mainstreaming gender equality throughout the whole global footprint, not only in the external programming, but also in the internal staff structures, and doing this really deep work around how women are valued, how we see relationships, you know, what happens when you walk into your house. You could be, I've heard many women say this, you know, it's not enough to go to school. It's not enough to get a graduate degree. It's not enough to be a lawyer or a doctor, because when you open the door of your own home and walk through the threshold, you're still only a woman. You know, to be a good African woman means that you spend your life serving others, making them happy. And many, I've talked to many girls, you know, just asking, what's it like to grow up as a girl where you live? And, you know, it's still very much like women, girls are like, you know, pre-women, and women exist to serve others and to submit. So anyway, I think as faith-based organizations like World Vision and all of us, you know, in the ponds where we worship and go to church, you know, there's this deeper work of really making sure we're mainstreaming gender equality in all that we're doing. And that pays big dividends. So that's what we're really investing in. So.
Yeah, those are rooted belief systems, right? Hidden, but fueling everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. Charity, what are your biggest challenges and then where are you getting hope these days?
I think, you know, it's similar. It when you look around the world, you think we were making so much progress, which we have. We've made incredible progress. And then you look at certain issues and it's like, why are more girls out of school? Why is FGM still an issue, even though we know the tragedy of it? Why are, you know, how come there is still a $320 billion lack of access to capital for women when we know all the stats? And so sometimes global issues can feel overwhelming. Issues that we're working on can feel like nothing's getting better. Why haven't we made more progress? And you can get mired in feeling, frankly, paralyzed by the breadth of the issue. And I do think from a Western perspective, there are a lot of entities now that have muddled what it means to work on gender work. We've gotten distracted by things. And when I think about, you know, we can talk about all these other issues and I'm like, all they need is clean water. You know, let's not put our own whatever we're trying to do on these communities, that what they really need is clean water. What they really need is access to education. And so I think sometimes it can get challenging to work in this space when we're getting distracted by other issues that don't seem to be basic to what we're talking about. But I think what gives me hope is people like Emily and people like you, Danielle, and people like Lonnie and Caleb and Catherine Compton, and this army of people who care so significantly about the lives of those who, some, like I said, will never know all of their stories, will never know all of their names, but we care that their lives are better. We care that we're part of restoring and the restoration of culture and the restoration of what God intended, the kingdom of God here on earth. And so I think for me, it gives me hope that I can partner arms with someone else to say, we're moving in the same direction for these people, and we want to give them a better hope and future, just like we've had, and, you know, help them really come into all that God wanted them to be, just like we've been able to do. And so for me, that gives me hope, is the fact that there are people who care deeply about these issues, who are very generous, and who want to utilize not only their resources from money, but their talents, their skills, their ability to network and utilize their network for greater good and impact. And so for me, that's what gives me hope, is that people do really care about improving the lives of others. And I care about it so significantly. And I am with a tribe of others who do. And so it's fun to come alongside and to feel like we actually are making an impact. And though it might seem overwhelming, when we do it one step at a time together, there is going to be this, you know, wave that will come and actually turn the tide. And we get to be a part of it, and God allows us to participate. And that's an incredible thing to think about, that He allowed us to participate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we get to co-create, and it's beautiful. Charity, Evelyn, you're both giving me a lot of hope. And have challenged us on this episode. So if you're listening to this, in the show notes, there'll be links for where you can find out more information and go become an investor, or at least become a disruptor in your family investment strategy at the very least. And I love that there's a tide that's coming. So like, you could be the tipping point of wealth being used as a tool for empowerment. Wouldn't that be cool? So thank you guys. This means a lot.
I need to tell you about Strong Women, Strong World, and how you can partner and invest and come alongside and help. Strong Women, Strong World is a movement through World Vision that is doing incredible work. And we know that with intentional focus, this is Strong Women, Strong World and World Vision's understanding, extreme poverty doesn't stand a chance unless girls and women are empowered. That's not just them, that's everyone, but that's their focus. So their efforts focus on clean water and healthcare, protecting children from violence and harmful traditional practices, providing economic opportunities for women, and so much more. I mean, it goes on and on, guys, and it's absolutely beautiful. Since 2016, World Vision's reached more than 30 million women and girls, and their audacious new 8-year goal is to reach 150 million more, okay, by 2030. So this is, guys, empowering women and girls to live safer, healthier, more productive lives. This work really matters. So have a look, go to Strong Women, Strong World, and we'll include a link in the show notes and learn more and be part of the change that we need to see to make this world better.